What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Donald Trump's attacks on immigrants were some of the first executive orders he signed on January 20th when he was sworn in for his second presidential term. Here to talk to us about the anticipated impact on Black folks is Nana Gyamfi, the executive director of the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, or BAJI. Good morning.
Good morning. So glad to be here with you.
Oh, it's so good to hear your voice. It's been too long. I wish we were here to talk about something more cheery, but Donald Trump's another president, so I actually want to start,
here we are,
for the next 4 years. I want to start with something you all were ringing the alarm bell about before Trump was sworn in, and that is the Lake and Riley Act. What is that act? What does it do, and why is it concerning?
So the Lincoln-Riley Act is a bill that's going through Congress, already been through the House, through the Senate, now going back to the House at some point this week for a final vote that criminalizes immigrants, particularly will have an impact on Black and brown immigrants. But what it does is it says if someone is an immigrant and if they are undocumented, as this administration and its crew defines it. So it includes, you can be documented, you can have TPS, still covers you. And if you are accused of a crime, and I want to be clear about that, does not require you to be charged, does not require you to be convicted. If you are accused of a crime, you can be held indefinitely in detention prison without bond, without a way to get yourself out. There's no habeas or something that will help you to get out until they decide to deport you or not. You might just be sitting there for years and years and years, as we know some folks do already, just based upon the accusation. So there's no due process. There's no statute of limitations. There's no way for you to get out. And there is nothing where you can get to adjudicate to say, hey, actually, I didn't do this thing. And as you know, Kat, the vast proportion of the Black immigrants who are deported on criminal grounds. Almost 80% of the Black people deported in this country are deported on criminal grounds. If a person is from the Caribbean, it goes up to almost 90% of Black folks deported, being deported because of contact with the police. So this is going to be devastating for Black communities. Understand also they will detain first and ask questions later. Most African Americans don't have proof of citizenship. How you talk, your accent is not going to count because they know there are folks such as documented who came here when they were younger. And it just increases who gets caught up. And so African Americans can get caught up in that way. But it also increases just the policing of our areas all over this country. And so very concerning indeed. We're asking people to call their representative and urge them to vote no on this really anti-Black, anti-immigrant, draconian act.
One of the things that Biden did during the end of his term was to expand ICE detention centers, which will no doubt bolster the ability of the carceral state to enact policies like the Lake and Riley Act, correct?
Absolutely. One of the things that people in the immigrant rights space love to point out, and it's not, I just think a lot of it is the racism that exists even within the immigrant rights movement, just love to talk about, Obama as the deporter in chief, the deporter in chief, the deporter in chief. Biden long ago took that hat away from him. And there's just been information that was released by the Department of Homeland Security that indicates that the Biden administration deported more people than any president over the past 10 years. And understand the past 10 years includes Donald Trump's term. Okay.
Right.
Okay. And in terms of detention, he has increased the number of people detained in immigration prison to its highest level. Kat increased the number of federal prisoners under the criminal punishment system to its highest levels. And so mass incarceration, and we remember him as one of those who pushed the 94 crime bill and the 96 IRA bill that dealt with criminalization of immigration, mass incarceration is on his menu every day. And it, as you pointed out, it is making it easier in terms of the machinery to be able to have the spaces, the beds, the rooms, the money to be able to detain people in the way that the Trump administration is indicating it wants to.
I'm glad that you brought up the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act, because, you know, I'm always interested in conversations about root cause. And I'm wondering if you can just talk about the 1994 crime bill that was followed by the 1996 immigration bill and what kind of foundation they laid for where we find ourselves now.
So the 94 crime bill is this, you know, as many folks know, this sweeping legislation that increased sentencing, that increased the types of crimes where people could get the death penalty, that increased who it was that could be pulled in to criminal conspiracy charges, for example, really causing devastating harm in our communities. Maybe they described it as their effort to deal with the war on drugs. We understand that that war on drugs really was a war on Black, in particular Black communities, but Brown communities, Southeast Asian communities as well. And the results, you know, we see up until this very day in terms of just the generation of people and, you know, future generations that have been impacted by that mass incarceration system. I always remind people that California had a three strikes before, and that was in February of 94, and the federal wasn't signed until September of 94. So, and, you know, California is no stranger to this type of mass incarceration system. The 1996 laws are what Baji describes as the last really comprehensive immigration reform. You know, people talk about comprehensive immigration reform in the context of giving people some benefits and some permanent protections from deportation. But really, the last comprehensive immigration reform was the 1996 IRA-IRA, which created all of these ways in which people who are immigrants who have been criminalized, particularly by the 94 crime bill's provisions, now suddenly found themselves doubly punished by being deported, by not being able to come back to the country to reunite with family, to reunite with community, in some cases for over a decade, in some cases forever. And again, 40, 30 years later, we still have people right now who are not able to return to their families because of the provisions of the 96 laws. That police to deportation pipeline is the main way that Black immigrants find themselves separated from family and community and permanently banished, sometimes to countries that they don't even know. And it is what this Lincoln-Riley Act and so many other things we're going to see coming up. It is the machinery, the infrastructure, and the way of the pen, right, that allows for our people to be deported in these mass ways along with mass incarceration.
For those of you just joining, we are talking about the anticipated impact of Trump's anti-immigrant executive orders. Our guest is Nana Gyamfi, the executive director of the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, or BAJI. One of the executive orders signed by Trump was to declare an emergency, and I'm saying emergency in air quotes, at the border wall. Most folks don't think of Black immigrants coming through neighboring border walls. I didn't learn about it till an interview that I had with you, actually, where I got a clear picture. And I'm wondering if you can talk about the Black experience and how this order will impact them specifically.
Yeah, so this is going to really create just severe hardship for Black migrants. When we're talking about asylum seekers, Black asylum seekers that are coming to the border, first, Kat, most of those asylum seekers are coming from Haiti or they're coming from the continent. There are some other Caribbean folks, for example, that are coming. Obviously, we have our Black Garifuna folks coming from Honduras, but the majority of whom you are going to see are folks that are coming from Haiti and folks that are coming all the way from the continent of Africa. In both cases, No one is coming directly from their country all of a sudden to Mexico. That's not how it's working. They are going through other countries, either in Central America or often in South America, sometimes as far as Brazil and Chile, crossing borders, walking, going through jungles, you know, leaping over streams, trying to get past all kinds of people who are raping and murdering and robbing and targeting, in particular, from our conversations with people that we represent. And, you know, when we've actually gone to and we speak to folks that are there in Mexico at the southern border, in between and at the northern border of Mexico, that, you know, targeted particularly, Black women particularly targeted for rape, Black families particularly targeted for robbery or for kidnapping. And these folks are going through countries that frankly aren't too wonderful to their own Black people, you know? So they're not that excited about other Black people coming in from other places. Right. And are, you know, have these agreements with the United States that make it more difficult for people to come through, that have mandatory detention, et cetera. And when they come to the border between the United States and Mexico, they're trapped with no language access, with communities that are hostile towards them because of their Blackness. We documented this before in a report that we put out. People can get on our website called There Is a Target on Us, that specifically looks at African women and the way in which they were targeted. We have subsequent reports since then talking about, you know, the anti-Blackness that Black asylum seekers coming up through the Mexico border have experienced. And now we find again, our people are going to be trapped potentially for the next 4 years in situations in which, you know, Kat, we have buried folks, helped folks to go home to be buried who were killed because people just went into a shelter, found the first Black people they saw and just shot them dead. We're talking about that level of anti-Black violence that our people are experiencing. And we really need to have a categorical entry of folks who are most vulnerable in the situation in Mexico, Black folks, queer folks, folks who are, you know, need medical help, folks who are disabled. Those folks should just be getting in, but that's obviously not what's going to happen.
I had to inhale and exhale on that one. Another order signed, excuse me, was a suspension of the refugee program, which he dramatically slashed his first presidential term. And this was like the one time, right, the one place where the plight of Black immigrants came into mainstream media stories. Concerns about what that means for folks fleeing violent dangers or impoverished countries on the continent or places like Haiti, for example.
So it's very concerning. Obviously, when people decide that they are leaving, it's not just that you just say, oh, I'm out, and then you just go, and then you mysteriously and magically find yourself in the United States. Even if you are going through the refugee program, you have to find a place. And to think, have people think about, for example, Sudan, where there is a war going on right now, where there's been a war for at least 2 years now. And people are fleeing and trying to get out, and they have to find a place that is, you know, a refugee center, someplace in some country. Most folks are, you know, trying to make it to Kenya, some people to Egypt, some folks to Tanzania, to try to plead their case. It's not like automatic. They got to plead their case and prove that they qualify, that they fit within these boxes you got to fit in order to qualify as a refugee. And then you have to, you know, you get told basically what country are you going to. The Sudanese don't have the program the Ukrainians have, okay? If Ukrainians got brand new socks and drawers, they can be in their country and say, I want to go to the U.S. The Sudanese did not get that. They can't do that. So now when you are being told that you can't come to the U.S., right? The U.S. is saying no, or this is not a place that you can come. Or if you come here, the governors of the states are going to decide, do we want Sudanese people here? And so what do we think is going to happen, Kat? We have our people who are refugees in states that have a lot of space, right? In states that have a lot of room. And those states tend to be in the Midwest. Those states tend to be in the South. Those states tend to, you know, not be necessarily in the Northeast and in some of the urban areas, you know, that are already filled to capacity. And those are very states that don't really like a lot of diversity often, particularly with the political landscape that we are in right now. And so it is a very worrisome time in the, you know, concern about how are people getting into the United States that need that safety, but also if people get to the United States, what kind of support are they going to get or not get, and where are you going to put them?
I think it's important at this point in the conversation to put this in a global context, right? So the sentiment towards Black immigrants globally has gotten super intense. I experienced it a little bit when I took my daughter to Europe a couple of years ago, you know, until I opened my mouth, the assumption that I was a Black immigrant and the hostility that we faced, very different than when I traveled to Europe 20 years prior. And some of that is a result of the way that governments in Europe and other places have shifted dramatically to the right. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like this sort of global anti-Blackness, anti-Black immigrant sentiment that is sweeping everywhere.
Sweeping everywhere. We, again, there's a report that we did on it that you can find on Baji's website talking about the global anti-Blackness that we find through Europe, through everywhere, though, really, right? Even on the continent, even the Caribbean, you know, would they rather, you know, you hear countries talking about the concern that they have for Haitians and, you know, but don't nobody want no Haitians, you know, right? You know, people are not going out their way to create programs the way that programs were created, for example, here for Ukrainians. It's something to think about. There is always a notion of Black migration having to be rooted in providing labor to these countries of the North. And them controlling even that way in which, like, you know, migration happens. And so when it comes to labor migration, which is like a very narrow pathway, that is something, that is where they want Black people. You know, it's like you can come in the hull of ships and you can come to service them since the time of the hull of ships. That is fine. But when it comes to just movement as a human being, the human right to migrate, that is not fine. There's still a notion that Black people are not quite human, that Black people are, you know, criminals, that Black people are a burden on the system, that even though clearly all of these places we're talking about absolutely would not be, cannot be to this day who they are without Black people. Right. Without Black mm-hmm. people, you're nothing. Mm-hmm. What is France without Black people?
That part.
France is nothing. They don't even have a soccer team without Black people. They're nothing. They're nothing. Black people, they're not brown people. What are these countries? They're zilch. They're zilch. What is the United States without Black people? Everyone that came here, wanted to come here, all these people, Trump is, his family came from somewhere. They did not come here with the Mayflower. Even the Mayflower people came with somewhere, but you get what I'm saying. These people are, he's immigrating the same way that I am an immigrant. His people right. wanted to come here because of what Black people did in this country. And yet now suddenly, the sign says, no, we don't want folks to come here. And so I think, you know, one of the things that I'm talking about and really exploring is the notion of migration for Black people within the framework of reparations, that migration for Black people is actually part of reparations. We are following our people that you've taken. We're following our people that you've, you know, brain drained out of our countries. And we're following the resources that you've taken from our countries. We get to follow our people and we get to follow the prophet.
I've got to leave it there. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We will definitely be bringing you back as all of this unfolds over the next 4 years. Appreciate you.
Thank you so very much for having me.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.